Podcasting is a complicated profession, which is why we're here to discuss The Acolyte, currently airing on Disney Plus. My name is Dan Morin, and I am joined by my fellow Jedi investigators. Kat Benish is here. Hi, Kat.
Hello. I'm ready to talk about Jedi robes and the different types of Jedi robes and what it might mean.
45 minutes later. Tony Sindelar is also joining us. Hello, Tony.
Hello, Dan. Hello, Kat.
Hey, Tony. How you doing, Tony?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm pretty good. You know, let's make it through.
We're back.
It's
been a little while.
I know.
We had a little break. Mm-hmm.
I mean, we still saw each other pretty regularly. I ran a lot of Dungeons & Dragons for you people in the interim. Which just wasn't
you always make it seem like it's some sort of punishment.
It like, does sound a little bit like you're doing community service of some kind.
I mean, it does feel a little bit like outreach for troubled youth. But instead of troubled youth, it's like troubled middle-aged associates.
That's true. Touche. Well, this got real. Should we sit down? Should we talk about our feelings? Or should we talk about Star Wars and avoid talking about our feelings at all costs?
No, I'd like to talk about my feelings about Star Wars.
Oh, okay. Well,
and use this as a metaphor for generally how I feel about things.
Okay.
Right. Are there two Jedi inside you, possibly?
Yes, or two and they're
Force
twins.
Wielders? Oh, well, that makes sense. So they can share.
I actually didn't see the twins coming.
So
I think that was like the one thing I knew about the show ahead of time.
I got spoiled on it as well.
I was not spoiled.
We went back and watched the trailer, and the trailer very much attempts to elide over that.
It's nice. It's like
it does misdirect.
It's like the oldest plot twist in the book, and it's like twins. Who's not coming?
An evil twin.
I'm jumping ahead. I feel like the show didn't try and like it. The show makes some strange choices about what is supposed to be mysterious and not.
Yeah, I agree.
Because the twin thing did not seem like it was. I was like, oh, maybe they'll keep that secret for like an episode. And it's like, nah, like 12 minutes. That's what we got.
I was convinced the green lady was going to be evil, but and she's like, I guess that lady is innocent. So like, Osha's fine.
Yeah. Dan, how do we want to do this? We're talking about the first two episodes.
We're discussing the first two episodes.
Do we do recaps? Do we talk about the characters?
Yeah,
how do we do this podcast?
Is Lost/Found. The second episode is Revenge/Justice.
Wait, they have slashes?
Yes, they are, because there's two people.
As if, the duality of...
Was there a title screen?
Yes, The Acolyte, and you notice it has two rings.
No. I got that, but a title screen of the name of the episode?
No.
Okay.
Most of these, aside from the animated stuff, they don't really... I guess The Mandalorian and the other ones show
they
you.
Yeah, they totally did.
Yeah, The Acolyte doesn't, and or didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, do we have to talk about crawls or not crawls or text?
I thought this was done well with the fades explaining in.
There was more. I think this is my concern about every Star Wars since Episode 4 is like, why so much text? I'm not here to.
Wait, you're not like reading?
But
I do not like reading.
Not everyone's been following with like bated breath every single like episode of the Book of Boba Fett. So like people need to get caught up on what's going on.
I just think, you know, some of it I didn't need.
Like what? What did you not need? I'm in argumentative mood.
Apparently, I like it. It seemed like a lot. I was ready to get into stuff. I think I was confused because it seemed like the quantity of text that should have been in the black and yellow crawl, but it was instead in the blue blue thing that's like usually
a long
we get
time
like,
ago.
Yeah. We get a sentence in that. I just thought it was mislabeled.
All it basically said is like this was 100 years ago and Jedi are cool, right?
Yeah, so 100 years ago, before the rise of the Empire, it is a time of peace. The Jedi Order and the Galactic Republic have prospered for centuries without war. But in the dark corners of the galaxy, a powerful few learn to use the Force in secret. One of them, a lone assassin, risks discovery to seek revenge.
I think it's that last one which offends me. I think when if you want to like... If you want to set the time of this... Because people do get very confused about like... When is
timing.
This thing
when
relative
is
to this?
Yeah,
is someone? Yeah. When is Rebels? Wait, is Luke Skywalker alive, retired, or not born yet? And that's fair. I think it's when they're like when you start telling me, and this is what's happening right now.
No,
I'm just like I have a pulse. I can see the spooky lady in all black paying a weird Jawa kid money to
purple.
Sorry.
No, I agree with you. I think I agree with you. I think I was with that broader question of a couple times. I think they've just jumped to the, like, we're not going to make this a mystery. Everyone's going to accept this as a fact and we're going to move on. I think that's an example of, I don't have a huge problem with it, but I can absolutely understand your critique of it.
I think there is a point, too, where they decided they needed three paragraphs. Like, there is an element of formatting in this where they felt like they needed, like, it's balance. Like, it, if you feel weird, like, the chapter two, there's like, what, two paragraphs? That seems weird.
Some of this may simply be trauma from, like, the Emperor Has Returned. It's like,
War!
War. You know, as previously announced on an episode of Fortnite or something, the Emperor is back.
I liked that it was not a crawl, that it was just a sort of brief. It had sort of a slight feeling of watching a historical.
Yeah.
It was like a samurai movie. A samurai movie comes to mind, too. Well, a war movie, too.
Yeah. So we did that, and we had the craw. People feel differently about the craw. I was kind of like, meh. Crawl stuck in my craw, but then we go to
not
basically
Tatooine.
What I feel not Tatooine, another planet. They do name the planet Ueda. Yes, Dan, thank you. They name the planet. There's a bunch of aliens and there's a spaceship in the background. There's buildings and none of them look like anything we've seen before because it's 100 years ago. But they all clearly look like Star Wars.
It also feels like a lot like Maz's bar.
I was reminded of Maz's. Yeah. Maz's hangout too. So
I was
like,
looking at the Twinkie doors or the Twinkie gateways. Yeah. I'm sure there's a real name for them. But I think it is overall, I think to that point, Tony, I think this show definitely seems to nail the, we want this to feel like Star Wars, but we're going to show you all new stuff. And also it's all going to be a little older because like we're not as
which
advanced.
Is in some ways, I feel like it's a thing that, you know, I don't think the prequels nailed, at least for me.
No, not at all.
And I like this. I think I was a little worried because, so this is the end of the High Republic, correct? The beginning of the end. And like, I've read comic books that are set in the High Republic. And I guess those don't look recognizably Star Wars, which I don't know if that was a failure of the art or the art direction, but there was a lot of stuff where it's like, in part, it would be like, here's a bunch of stuff on Coruscant, and everything's Art Deco. And I was like, okay. I mean, this doesn't actually feel like Star Wars to me, other than that you wanted to use the word Jedi in it. But this, where planet we've never seen before, but clearly looks like Star Wars. And we get a big, elaborate set-piece fight that I feel like
was good.
Accounts for roughly 50% of all the content in all the trailers that we had seen
before
now. Well, you want to use it. I do want to make one comment as per your design. There's actually a good interview in The Verge with the production designer and the costume designer for this show where they talk specifically about exactly what we're saying, which is how do you make it recognizably Star Wars, but how do you do new stuff because it's such a different era? And I thought it was an interesting read. So if you want to go search for that.
And I think to that point too, I was joking about the Jedi clothes, but clearly something is going on. Carrie-Ann Moss is wearing, I think, what we would first associate with, like, those are the brown like traveling tunics. That's what all the Jedi wear. And then like later we see something that is not that, which is very confusing.
It's that thing where it's like, this is just a criticism of Star Wars, not of the Acolyte or this episode. But there is the thing where it's like, the prequels and the animation stuff basically establishes that like all Jedi dress the way Obi-Wan was dressed when he was hanging out. And then it was like, you didn't even change your clothes. You were in hiding. You were wearing the uniform. I thought that was like your weird desert robes.
I never really thought about that, but you're 100% right.
Yeah. I was like, couldn't the robes be like green or blue or just brown? That's Jedi robes. It's
or white.
It's
kind of like everyone like bedazzled jumpsuits instead.
My brain immediately was like, where is this place? Ueda, like, is this a core world? Is it a midrim? Is it is it an outer world? And it feels a little bit kind of Wild Westy with a big old tavern where there's people gambling and doing whatnot, but also children are allowed
naturally.
I like that our Jedi Master Indara is just like
at a table
chilling with a bunch of people who are like hanging around at a table, like,
but also kids begging for money outside the town know where she is, right? So she's like local legend at Jedi Master.
Yeah, I mean, I think that it is interesting. I think the thing that interests me the most about this era, and we've discussed this a little bit on prior episodes, is the idea of the Jedi being kind of scattered throughout all these different worlds. Yes. And having their outposts and being the local arbiters or keepers of the peace or whatever.
That's what gets weird later too when you hear the temple. And like, I think we'd always earlier on thought them more of like mystics, but the more and more we learn about the more like you are literally police force. So
they're like marshals.
It'd be super weird if we call like, hey, you got a lost wallet, you got to head down to the temple. It's a very strange.
They're like in between being like marshals and also like justices of the peace.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're right. Like,
The other
slash clerics.
The two is, and knowing what we know now about potentially the other three targets, and now thinking back to that first scene, I could also understand a world where she is also, so the one, there's the ascetic who didn't talk for 10 years.
Yep.
She might also, thank you. She might also sort of just be like off hermit. So there's a chance the Obi-Wan look is actually the hermit look versus like the Jedi
Knight
look.
Hermit uniform.
They have a hermit uniform.
Before you go into seclusion, please check out one hermit uniform from the Jedi outfitters.
It's like if you know the military, they have different uniforms for different things. They have dress uniforms. They have like, you know, camo fatigues. Just, you know, it's like this is the hermit uniform.
It just mainly looks like it was, I just assumed that like it was Obi-Wan's bathrobe, and if he had known people were coming, he would have dressed differently.
It would have been funny if they were like, yeah, the Jedi's right over there, and it pans over and she's just wearing like a suit or something.
Anyway, so a great
Dan, was this what you were spoiled on, because you said you were spoiled on
the twin thing I was spoiled on. And I do think I had an inkling. I saw somebody talking somewhere like, or saw a headline that was something like, that's it from Carrie Ann Moss, essentially.
Well, yeah, I was surprised, but we know Dan and I watched the trailer right before this again. We know there's a flashback, so like she does come back. But I was expecting a little more from Carrie Ann Moss. She was great in this, though. Great fight.
Yeah.
Really fun.
One of the possibly best Star Wars fight scenes out there. I mean, very... the most martial artsy of Star Wars fights.
I mean, this and the next episode, the one with Lee Jung Jae, and the next one is also.
This one was slightly more exciting just because I thought the environment for it was bigger and more elaborate versus they're just like kind of in an empty street.
Yeah.
But they're both very fun and well presented. You know, we have the kind of, we don't know her name yet, but she is, she's May, is the unhappy dark side twin who's an assassin who's real mad about something, seems to have a lot of ideas about Jedi. She's been doing her own independent research and seems to have some weird codes and
Well, we'll talk more about that too, about like why she has to kill one of the four Jedi without a weapon.
Yeah. Kind of a little bit of a serial killer ritual vibes there.
I'm sure it's
Well, she's also, I think, been told to do that, right?
Yes.
Less of a serial killer typically don't have masters.
Depends on how many episodes of serial killer TV shows you watch.
Fair point. Yes.
Yeah. So we have this big elaborate fight scene, and then we get the TV title card that I let you know you're watching The Acolyte.
I did appreciate that the way that fight ends up playing out is not even... Indara is not even surprised, really, at dying because she sees... Basically, she sees what May is going to do, and she makes the choice. Essentially, I'm going to save an innocent person at the risk of my own life.
And this is, I think, the most interesting part of the show so far. Is like, well, very clearly, like what happened all those years ago, because this was like someone who was not expecting twins. I will say it was a good fake out in terms of Carrie Ann Moss clearly thinks, is it Indara? You said,
yeah,
Indara recognizes her and is not surprised to see her. Which then leads the audience to think that something happened to Osha all those years ago. But when Torben dies, he calls her May, right?
Yeah.
Which then makes you realize something happened, and there are definitely some alternate truths happening.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's kind of a twist slash kind of a play with what you think the show is going to be. I thought the show was going to be kind of a murder mystery around who is killing these Jedi.
Likewise.
And if that is what you think the show is or want the show is, you'll probably be a little disappointed because they show you it.
It's not a whodunit. It's a whydunit. No,
it's what happened. Yeah. It's what went wrong all these years back. So we go from our murder to just a day working in space, where Osha, who looks a lot like the assassin who just murdered Indara, though I did not follow exactly here. Is the distinguishing thing that Mei has like a brand
tattoo.
Yes, which will come into play later,
I'm sure,
based on stuff in the trailer.
Yeah, okay. We saw someone else who had that. In the center of the head, and shorter hair, similar hairstyle, but shorter
hair. Different.
So Osha is working. She is a mechnik, which I assume is a Star Wars word and not a weird word I've just never heard before.
I think it's just a mechanic.
Okay, space mechanic.
Yeah. So everything I've seen suggests essentially this is in a period where droids are not as advanced as they are in. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Present, quote unquote, present day Star Wars, and so there aren't that many astromechs. And essentially,
it's interesting because there are later pilot droids, but
yes, but they're also chairs, Tony.
They are also chairs. Yes. So she is doing, but also she's doing dangerous work that a human isn't supposed to be doing. I think there's a line.
Well, that basically, in there. I think it's their. My hunch is they are cheaper than the droids.
Yeah,
But essentially, though, that for safety reasons, again, I've saw much on Twitter, Mastodon, talking about the fact that we've named the character Osha. That the Senate has outlawed the use of humans to do exterior spaceship work, only droids, but I'm guessing that's super expensive, so Trade Federation is trying to cut costs. Happy to see the Trade Federation again, and with slightly less...
Whoa, do we know that they're the Trade Federation? They just might be...
No, they
let us know the Trade Federation. Also, slightly less racist accents this time around, which was...
Slightly.
One of them has no accent, like, basically just a neutral accent, which is fine. The other one has a slight accent that's not...
This
is an attempt to feel like the hand of Dave Filoni on this a little bit.
It's like they're not all racist, just those guys happen to be racist.
Those guys
we're real
racist.
Sorry, we've done a
apology tour is happening.
The pacing of this episode's a little weird because it's like we're on there and like Jedi cops show up immediately and it's like, wow, Jedi cop response time is real fast. Someone was murdered on another planet yesterday and they're here to talk to you.
This is actually one thing that got me. This is the thing that's the most uneven for me is I would like in my feeling of Star Wars, I like a little more sense of scale where it feels like it takes time, like stuff is far flung and it takes time to get between places and like there are disconnectedness.
Yeah, but I feel like stars in general has been like, this is the Game of Thrones issue right there. Yeah, there used to be distances, but now like the time, collapsing the distance between everything. Like Mandalorian was jumping around a Coruscant, Outer Rim all the time.
I just think you could do an interesting story in which that was a limiting factor. Like you would have to build the story around that though. Yeah.
I mean, especially with... something that is kind of a mystery. You could have interesting things where it's like, you know, characters over here don't know a thing that characters on the other side of the galaxy need to know that they would approve, that they would benefit from. All right, so we got a bunch of Jedi in the show. The two that we meet here are Yord Fandar. It's a very Star Wars name. These are different Jedi robes. They've got a lot of yellow in them.
Yeah, these feel like, to me, I interpreted these as essentially Jedi Knights.
Dress robes?
No, but essentially like, what's that called when you're a Mormon, you go out and do your term of service?
Oh, I forget what the term is. I want to say proselytizing, which is true, but I forget what
Okay. Anyways, the idea is sort of like this is the group of the Jedi who are like out serving as representatives of the Jedi out there. Mm-hmm. So a little bit of a police officer, but also a little bit of like, so it's also very much Jedi Knight. So like this is basically his tour of duty.
Yeah. Also, I mean, I like this character.
He's great
because
he's adult.
He's stuffy and he's by
the
book.
He's very consistent. He's also. He is the Jedi that pulls out his lightsaber all the time.
All the time.
And like, especially, which I always find like amusing compared to, because there's other Jedi who basically either never pull out their lightsaber or it's like, it's a big deal. And there's even the line from Mei, who's like, once a Jedi has drawn their lightsaber, they must kill before they can put it in
the air. It must taste blood.
Yeah. He's using it as like a lantern
samurai laws. Yeah. You know, and it's like, that guy just needs a flashlight and he pulls it out like to look around a cave. But don't show you how many, like, you know, rats he has to kill, because he has to, it must taste blood before taste blood before put it away. And he has specifically a yellow blade.
Yeah, it was interesting.
Which I don't know if we know in this continuity, but isn't a yellow blade the whole Temple Guardians deal?
Temple Guards do use yellow blades, but I don't know if it's intended to be exclusively theirs. I mean, there is some variation. Also, I will note, Charlie Barnett is the actor who plays Yord.
From Russian Doll. Yeah.
And Tony, you may also recognize him from Arrow. He played the future version of John Diggle Jr.
Oh, wow. I did not. That didn't stick with me.
That did, yeah. Anyways, yeah. I recognized him from that. But so he is, we also, like, Ocean knows him. They're pals. They train together. He is just made Jedi Knight. I appreciate, this is one thing I do like about this and the era here, is that we've kind of reclaimed the Jedi Knight as a title, as a, like, because he talks about passing his trials. Mm-hmm. Like, I enjoy that little bit of structure to it, because in the prequels, I felt like they were very squishy with all of it. It's like, Anakin gets made a master at, like, 18 or something, and then they won't let him on the council, and this is a whole thing. But, like,
he's the chosen one.
I know, whatever. yes, but, like,
he
as
does,
a rank,
he does catapult up through the ranks very quickly.
I appreciate that this recognizes, like, okay, he is somebody who's essentially just graduated from being a Padawan to being a full-blown Jedi Knight.
But he has a Padawan now. He has his first
Padawan.
Right,
and he has probably a Padawan, but he's very, like, you know, he's doing the whole, like, I'm very by the book and very proper about everything and very proud, clean uniform. I love the scene where he's ironing his shirt later.
They, you know, some people, I think, didn't love the first two episodes of The Acolyte in terms of, like, there's a lot of Jedi.
Yeah.
And perhaps it then, you know, other times that there have been a lot of Jedi in Star Wars have not always been high water marks for Star Wars in terms of council meetings. But I kind of appreciate that. I think we see different types of Jedi.
Exactly. Including a Wookiee Jedi.
Yeah, Wookiee Jedi. But I mean, we also have, like, the hyper competent Padawan later that we'll meet. We have the Jedi Master. I mean, I appreciate that there are flavors of Jedi.
Yes. Yeah. Not just, everyone is the
Jedi
same.
Is not a type. Jedi is not,
and it's
like,
hard because in the prequels, the Jedi Masters were all roughly interchangeable, created so they could have different action figures. They basically all had the same, you know, they're all the once you're a Jedi Master,
you've lost your
you're
personality.
Just you're yeah you're real boring. Your personality is sitting.
I enjoy the it's good. I also got very strong, like, Phantom Menace Obi-Wan vibes off of what's his name? Yord.
Yeah. Yord.
But nope. Master, we don't do it. Yeah.
Yeah. He has studied the Jedi handbook very closely.
He has it. It's in his robes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is one of those, I think this is, Dan, you mentioned the, like, timing and distance being a little weird, because they show up, they question Osha. There's some nice stuff where basically, I did appreciate this. It's like, you know, an interrogation is a nice, give us your backstory to the audience moment. I was like, I like that. And he's like, yeah, tell us stuff. So you were in the Jedi Order. You left, maybe in your own terms, maybe not. You're doing your own thing now. You know, you've told us how long. They basically placed her under arrest. But then they don't take her to Coruscant.
No, another spaceship shows up to take her. That was weird.
A prison spaceship that has no staff.
It's like a prison bus. It's like they send it around bus to collect prisoners.
But I was wondering why that was. Then obviously it was using to drop the plot. That definitely struck me as a little weird. I did also appreciate the... I was about to say something really insightful and interesting, and I've totally forgot it, so I'm just going to pass it back to you guys.
Okay.
I'll come back to it.
The prison transport is an interesting... I agree. It feels a little off, especially when you sort of follow that down the rabbit hole of where it ends up taking you, is that it's not important, right? Yes. She crash lands on this random planet. they have to go planet. Find
yeah.
her.
Yeah.
And then they find her and it's fine and they bring her back.
Yeah.
It's not actually like, well, yeah. it's just plot perambulations.
Well, that's what I was going to say. When we first see Osha walking under the screen, she's joshing with her friend who asks, like, what did you do with your free day yesterday? And she's like, oh, I'm not going to tell you. And so again, I legitimately thought it was her. Though I was like, something's, she looks different. I wonder if this is a flashback. It took me a while to realize it's a different character. But I just like wrote it off. So they were all prepared to like leave you with a lot of doubt as an audience.
I was going to say the other thing was, I glimpsed this as I was skipping back through the episode to find, the title card, the transition where she wakes up, it's done very dramatically. Like when we first meet her, she's like gasps, wakes up, and the camera does the whole rotate thing.
Alarm clock. I'm late for work.
Yeah, but like it also is kind of throws you off kilter because I think again it's trying to encourage you to think like, was this a dream? Was this her? You know, being
possessed.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Well, and also I was surprised when she woke up. I was expecting her to be on a ship by herself, and it just continues to be like, wait, she's on like. Hiding in plain sight. Wait, she's working as a mechanic. Like I thought, this was going to be her ship, and just keeps making you very confused. Yeah. It was good.
I do want to give credit to Amanda Stenberg, who I think does a great job of managing to make these two characters feel very different.
Yes.
Like even in just their bearings, their carriage, the way they move, facial, like emotional, like the way we see them interact with other people. I think she does a really nice job of. I was never confused about which character I was seeing, which is a danger sometimes when you have somebody play multiple characters. Is like, wait, which character am I looking at now? But she does such a good job of managing to make those characters that I forgot. I was like, oh, yeah, there's two characters. Mm-hmm. So prison break time.
Prison break. You know, design of the prison ship, fun. You know, droids that are also seats, fun.
Yeah.
Jerk Star Wars prisoners, kind of fun. Weird sociopath prisoner that has a parasite on his mouth. Yeah. That felt a little like
Star Trek-y.
That felt a little not Star. I guess to me that felt like I don't know Seti Eels from Wrath of Khan or something like that. I found it upsetting and I didn't like it.
It was a little upsetting. What I did enjoy about it was twofold. One, it reminded me of that thing in Rogue One.
Oh, the mind
thing.
Then
also the torturer in Andor again. Mm-hmm. So with basically the idea of like, and I think fundamentally my hunch of this show is going to be is that the Republic is somewhat corrupted. Potentially that's may go there, may not go there. And essentially you see things like that feel inhumane already being there, that like the Empire wasn't just brand new, but in some ways inheriting some of this. So I kind of like that of like, are the Jedi the good guys?
Well, I mean, that's our thread that runs through so many of the things we've discussed and seen in the last.
But Dan, this is 100 years ago. They were good then,
They're
right?
They're good then.
Are you telling me the Jedi may never have been the good guys?
Ajab, Tony.
Oh, no. So the spaceship that she's on. Yeah. So basically, all the convicts on the ship, or maybe they're not convicts yet, all of the people detained on the
innocent
ship.
Innocent until proven guilty.
In our world.
They escape, you know, a bunch of them in one pod and one apparently really spooky dude in another pod. Don't worry, they're fine. They will be captured by the time we see them next and are behind force fields and whatnot. But Osha is going to crash land on the ship, or crash land on random planet that's kind of icy wherever they are. I don't know. There's caves.
It's called Karlak. It's not Karlak. The home of the Sarlaks.
Yeah, it's called Karlak, but probably also we're not going to spend time on Karlak, so
no,
don't worry
I don't
about
think
it.
Matters.
Is the Vision in this episode?
Yes.
The Vision's still in this episode, right? So she has a trippy, maybe dream sequence, maybe flashback, maybe force connection with a twin sister thing that, I guess, establishes, yes, there are two people for sure.
And it is interesting that it seems like, I know we're kind of jumping over this, I think two things. One, that it seems like only Osha's getting visions of May. May is not getting visions of Osha. And also, the degree to which May and then her friend Jacksonville Jaguars Rule.
Yep.
From the
Jacksonville Jaguars Rule.
The Good Place.
Chimere.
Chimere. Also, great character. are some ways our protagonists, right? They're not presented as bad people. They're kind of like endearing and lovely.
Well, they're murderers, Kat, just to be clear.
Yes, but the way they're presented is like
the
kind
way
of
they murder. Yes.
No, but like clearly like they're victims of something.
We are
going.
Intended to sympathize or empathize with them.
Sure. Say it that
way. They should call their parents because they appear to have accidentally joined a Sith cult.
Yeah.
Or something.
Someone should call their parents.
Yeah. Should we jump ahead? We have two episodes to cover. Yep. She's going to be crashed on this planet for a long time.
No,
the Jedi show up and they're running through caves and she almost falls off a cliff. But her old master saves her with some really nice use of the Force, catching people. That's nice. Good job. This is Sol, is Sol a Jedi master?
Yes.
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 He's dressed like a Jedi master. So he's wearing the robes that I associate with the Jedi master.
Yeah.
Which may also be the hermit robes.
So we have kind of... There's lots of Jedi in the show, but it seems like our main three Jedi are Sol, Jedi Master, Yord, Jedi Knight, and Jackie the Padawan,
who is great.
Daphne Keene, who is from his Dark Materials, and Logan. So if you
little Wesley Crusher energy from Jackie.
I really enjoy, but like a little
actually confident,
a little sassy,
a little confident. Yeah. Like, well, I mean, like, you know, I'm just saying, if she saved the Enterprise, she would be saving it from a danger that she did not create.
Yeah, Jackie feels also a lot more self confident than Wesley Crusher. Mm-hmm. And the fact that she's sometimes scolding her master for his attachment, and he's like trying to make up these BS things about why it's okay that he has attachment.
Yeah,
just, and I also, you know, a lot of gifted child energy.
As I said, I enjoyed the part where she gives Yord grief for put on a shirt, Yord. You know, like it's such a good.
I was like, why is Yord not wearing a shirt in this?
Ironing his uniform.
Totally. He's ironing his uniform.
Steaming. I think he's steaming it.
Steaming it.
Excellent stuff.
So we do get Sol is interesting. So, you know, there's a lot of characters here who have history, and Sol tells us about May and Osha, or he's telling us, but technically he's telling Yord and Jackie. And Sol's story changes a little bit over these episodes, right?
Mm-hmm. Like, I missed that. I got that he's there to he's on the planet. It sounds like he's deployed to the planet. There's four of them, and he saves.
He says that he saw May die.
Yes.
And then later he's like, oh, May's alive. And it's like, did you not see
May die? Well, it sounds like he saw May's body.
Well, he and Osha both say, because they agree later on that they're like, this seems impossible because we both saw it, right? Like, so it's also possible he may be in the dark about what the other three may have done.
Yeah, that's very much the thing that Sol is definitely, something happened on that planet. Yeah. The other... two of the three are definitely complicit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Indara really recognized her as May.
Yeah.
And Torben 100% recognizes her.
And has guilt, significant guilt. Yeah. So enough to commit suicide.
Making me wonder if they sort of sussed out that she might have some dark side tendencies and were like,
yeah. Is that how they dealt with? Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess we're kind of jumping ahead to the second episode.
Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple really quick. The Sol, we also get Master Vernestra, who is we get the impression a bit political.
The green one?
Is higher up. Yeah. She's higher up.
Again, I was very concerned that she was like, oh yeah, don't raise too much noise. Just go get her, taking care of her. We're not going to have her look like a whole court case here. Just like the Jedi cannot handle like the
just
drama
they put
of
the
this.
They put the cover-up stamp on the paperwork.
Yeah, 100%. And then that's so, like, I was convinced, like, oh, no, she is in on this. And then she's like, oh, interesting, there's, like, a twin? I had no idea. Yeah, Osha must be totally innocent. Go work with her. I was like, so the green one's not evil.
She apparently is an established character in the High Republic canon stuff already, and is apparently a popular character, so I assume... is on the up and up.
Oh, she had real, like, creepy, evil Jedi vibes.
She had... Which, like... So the Jedi had, they weren't just like bureaucratically impinged. They also have some evil Jedi. They shouldn't have any evil Jedi. They should only be a failure of bureaucracy, is what I'm saying. These guys, they never actually had their act together.
I do want to give, so Lee Jung Jae, who plays Saul, is probably most famous to people as the lead from Squid Game. He did not speak basically any English before taking this job.
No way, really?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
Yeah, and he basically did like a crash course, apparently, in learning English for this role specifically.
Oh, wow, that's so cool. No, I really
like
great.
Him. He's really good. Like, I think he does a great job, and that's a hard ask.
Yeah.
Yeah, he gives a strong vibe of not necessarily... It'd be interesting where the story goes, but definitely someone who is very faithful to the, like, maybe not the letter of the law, but the spirit of what it means to be a Jedi.
He apparently, which is fascinating, because one of his sort of template was Qui-Gon.
Yeah. Oh, 100%.
And he has that definite a vibe about that.
Yeah.
All right. So I can zip us through the second episode. I guess there's one little scene at the end where...
We did skip the there is an evil Dark Jedi Master.
There is an evil Dark Jedi Master.
Who... To talk about the lines, he basically says, if I get this right, of like, you can't kill... Is there a quote? Can we... Like, what he says is kind of weird.
The Wikipedia summary says, elsewhere, Mei meets with her mysterious master who has challenged her to kill a Jedi without using a weapon. But I don't remember what the dialogue
But he says,
is.
And that makes you an acolyte.
Yeah, I don't... I did not entirely... follow this one bit.
But and also he's I think potentially important, he does ignite his lightsaber when he says that, and then we both in this episode and the next
like
episode
this lightsaber
well but bear with me Dan pointed out to me when we were watching that she Mei repeatedly tries to grab for other Jedi's lightsabers.
She makes a move on both Indara and Torben's Saul's sabers.
Yes.
And she has a whole conversation with Chimera about it too, about needing the poison, etc. I feel like this is sort of like, in order to pass the test, you need to do this without a weapon, basically. And she also does the thing where she tries to get all the Jedi to attack her, right?
Yes.
She's trying to provoke them.
Yeah.
Which is weird. Like, it feels like there's a... I don't know if there's a psychological element there or the idea of her, like, I can basically, if I goad you into attacking me, I can claim it's self-defense or like justify it in my head as self-defense, but it's unclear why.
20 point in the chat, an acolyte kills a Jedi without a weapon.
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I have a lot of questions about this cult, mainly how Manny Jacinto got into it. He seems like such a nice guy. Also, not an assassin. He's like the quartermaster to this.
But he still has good moves.
He has skills. He manages to prevent her from killing him.
He does.
And he has, I think the way he plays that is like, you know, belies that there's something else going on there. So anyways, our second episode basically starts with Mei trying to kill Torben, who has taken this vow that is basically hasn't spoken in 10 years, and he just floats around in forced meditation, but he has a big force shield that she can't get through. So that doesn't, they sort of detect that she has been there. The Jedi detect that she's been there, but they aren't able to catch her. And so our Jedi pals are diverted here to investigate. We have an interlude with Mei and Chimera. We meet Chimera, who is basically helping her, and she convinces him to make this poison for her.
And don't remember, I think coming up playing one of our D&D games, is the drunk samurai one of the archetypes or an arc?
Drunken Master is a
classic Jackie Chan character.
It is, but it's also like then become kind of a template or a stereotype of a type of character. Yeah, of like the guy who seems like they're not. Like, they're out of it, but they're actually super competent.
Yeah,
and I feel like manages a little bit of that.
Yeah, he's playing. He does feel like his sort of genial nature is a bit of a cover over.
I mean, has he actually fallen asleep in the back of the shop that he's like taken over?
Yeah, it's unclear. Is he secretly the actual Sith Master?
I don't think so. No,
I don't. No.
But if that's true, I am here for it.
He would have to travel through some kind of portal to make that possible, Dan.
Sith portals. So, and then we established that there are four. We know all about this. And also, this is, I think, another time that we hear. So, Brendok, which is where Mei and Osha were born. There was a fire. Osha believes that Mei started the fire that killed her family, essentially. And that seems to be borne out by what Saul remembers, but we are starting to feel like there might be more to that story.
Yeah.
Chimera also tells May that, like, it's not just the, like, getting him to use the poison, or is that him telling her the other way around, like, the confession, like, you want to offer him absolution. I think Chimera tells May, like, you can offer him forgiveness and absolution for his sins, and that is something he will willingly take on because of who this guy is. And so we essentially have a bit where, like, she makes him this poison, and it's a poison from her home planet. She goes back and, you know, offers it to Torben. And so that is the moment where, he actually does take it and recognizes her, and then dies just as our rest of our pals show up, and Osha is found, because Osha has separated herself from the group and is found standing over the body.
Thankfully they didn't. I appreciated that they introduced this and were like, no.
It is a little bit, this is a silly pacing moment where it's people are like, let's take you to Torben. And she's like, why don't we'll just go this way and I'll go here five minutes earlier.
I was like, well, why didn't the Jedi just take him on, like, what are the fairies going to go through the kitchens and you're just going to see him uncleaned? Like, why didn't they take the fastest way there?
Also, because Saul seems to sense that something
is
happening.
It's not like it's a life or death situation. Yeah. Oh, wait, it is. I appreciated that. I thought they were going to be like, you know, if you are a murder suspect, do not wander off on your own.
Yeah, right. Well, Yord follows her, which is like,
no, I've been here the whole time, roughly.
Right. And he is by the book about this, too, right? So he's not trying to throw her under the bus. He's just like, I'm going to follow her because I'm suspicious of her, but I'm not going to, like, lie about it.
It felt a little unnecessary, I guess.
It's a little weird. Yeah, you want the moment where she discovers the poison and finds this guy is dead. And, like, you know, as we start to also realize, she knows all these people, right? Like, but it is it's not quite ham-fisted. It's just clumsy. It's a little clumsy in its staging.
I think it's the little bit, like, of the snowball rolling down the hill of playing fast and loose with distances, how long it takes to get anywhere, you know, people going to the same place but taking different paths. I don't know. We have not gotten to our final judgments yet. I think I am enjoying this, but I am perhaps not yet seeing perhaps the level of sophistication I was hoping for from the person who created Russian Doll, like thinking that we'd get something Star Wars-y in that vein.
I just want this is my frustration, as anybody who's listening to me talk about any TV or movies, like, I just want the screws tightened. I want everything to feel like it's a little more solid and holds together a little better. And, like, elements like that often feel to me like indications of larger problems, where it's like you're not making the right decisions about some of these, like, things that seem menial, but it's the stuff that takes you out of the world and then makes you a little less willing to buy into some of the other stuff. Mm-hmm. At least for me, that is my.
I see you guys are saying it's still early on. And I like how fresh it is. So I'm giving it
You're waiting and seeing.
Yeah, what's going to hold it all together for me is, like, what is actually the conspiracy on Brannock? Did I get that right, Brannock?
Yeah.
And if that is something fresh and interesting, then I am for it. If that's a little tired, then
it is a different type of Star Wars story than we've seen before. Appreciate which that. I like that. I like that it's set in a different time of the Star Wars world. This is very different than anything else we've seen in TV or animation, so that's cool. I like the idea that it's like something weird happened with four Jedi who are now masters, and some of them seem to, you know, we've got one who, like, has gone into meditating for like a decade, and then we have a Wookiee who's living like in isolation, and then we have two who are fine, those things are interesting, it's how is it going to fit together makes me hold a little bit. It is a little weird, for example, this episode ends with going to another Star Wars planet we've never seen, Kofar, where there's like jerks walking around in the woods and the jerks get attacked by a Wookiee Jedi, and it's like, I felt like I didn't actually need that scene.
It felt like a tease of something that's like, Yeah. That could have been stuck at the beginning of the next episode.
But I enjoyed it. I felt like that was very much like, we're going to tell you what's coming next. It feels like such a classic. They do like, oh, here's what we're going here next. So we're going to give you a little tease of it. So I have otherwise too, because sometimes I worry the pacing feels more like The Mandalorian. Like, okay, this week we're on this planet. Next week we're on this planet. It's like, tell me a little bit where you're going to go. And that way, to your point about distances, it makes it feel further away by sprinkling it through. So I actually think it will... I would much rather see a little bit of Wookiee now versus zero Wookiee now and all Wookiee next episode.
All Wookiee.
Okay.
I do want to say along those lines, but one thing I did appreciate about this, thinking as we watched the first couple episodes, I think this feels as distinct from the Filoni Star Wars episodes as those do from Andor. Basically, all three, the Andor and the Filoni stuff and this... all feel different to me, and I like that.
Yeah, no, I agree with that.
I'm a fan of, because like I think one of the problems with the Filoniverse stuff is like it started to feel all very samey, like just from the way it's shot and everything. Yeah. And
there is a distinct Filoni look and feel.
I think part of it is the volume, and it limits certain types of things you can do. And this is not predominantly shot on the volume, from what I can tell.
How did you feel about their plan to go and send May, Osha pretending to be May to meet with Chimer?
It is a very TV plot, but I actually was like, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun. And I also enjoyed that Chimer, I think he's onto it much sooner than he lets on, which I like as well.
It felt like a Dungeons & Dragons character plot, but I also appreciated, like, it didn't totally work.
Yeah,
yes.
Exactly. So I guess that's, and this was the, you know, we have, I guess in this episode, we established that there are, like, regional offices of the Jedi Order. They've got, you know, this local temple with Jedi that are stationed there. And I just feel bad. There's the one Jedi who's, like, on a balcony, who's just assigned to stand there with binoculars and watch his shop. And I'm just like, that, like, how many years of Jedi school did you go to be assigned an eight-hour shift standing there with binoculars?
Well, you had that cat at the point when we were watching that Yord watches the fight through the binoculars. Yeah. And she's like, you're 20 feet away. What do you need the binoculars for?
I thought he might be filming, maybe. Yeah.
And Osha is, like, listening. Osha's listening to her. I mean, I got the idea that, you know,
she hacked in. That was my feeling.
He's a Jedi master, and, you know,
So basically, we know May is alive at this point. They set a trap, which is assuming that May is going to come back. And then they, you know, Saul confronts her, and we have a big fight. He also tells her that Osha is alive, which she does not believe. So that adds another wrinkle to this, which is they both thought the other was dead.
Yeah.
They've both been fed, it seems like, a good helping of lies.
Yes.
So
maybe the prophecy about they can't get together. I don't, it's something on there. And so,
I don't know. I had this moment of being like, what if you even had one Sith who's also a Jedi who is basically playing both sides against the middle?
Yeah. I will say getting out of the fight was fantastic. I loved the dust storm. That was excellent.
Yeah.
That was cool.
I like the scene where the two twins see each other.
Yes.
And, you know, they're both in shock, and Osha fires the stun gun at the, and it caused, but perhaps misses intentionally.
Yeah, we weren't sure.
Misses because, and something else explodes behind her. I mean, I thought that was all very cool.
I also really enjoyed that we did not have to see the escape from that planet. They're just like, we know a way out. Great. Don't need to see it. Just go somewhere else. Like, not relevant for the plot. Thank you.
And that is the scene where we get May tries to sort of come up on Chimer, and he holds his own against her, which suggests that, again, he's got hidden depths, which I enjoyed. The plan, I also thought that as we discussed, the plan where they're like, how do we deal with this shop? And Yord's all like, oh, well, let's establish a perimeter and do this and then whatever.
And it's like, and then I'll go in with the gun.
And then Jackie's like, well, let's just set her in. She looks the same.
Yeah. That was great.
And I liked the bit with Saul.
It's a good plan, says Saul.
Yeah. You know? I liked the bit with Saul trying to talk to May. I thought that was, again, great work from Lee Jung-jae there, who is just like, you know, kind of, you know, he wants to save her, honestly. Yeah. Like, he still wants to redeem her and get her to sort of come in. And he's confused. He doesn't entirely know what's going on, which makes me think he is not a party to this, whatever
happened.
Or not
knowingly a party.
Yeah.
The escape, Then is that the flash forward to the
Wookiee? Yeah,
the Wookiee.
Yeah. I think that's about it. So two episodes in, I believe there are six episodes left.
So yeah, we've seen one quarter of it, which feels weird.
I'm all for, again, faster pace. I'll say so far, I like this more than Ahsoka. Not as much as Andor, but again, I think Andor is going to be a high water.
Yeah,
second season of Andor is maybe not. I'm concerned the second season won't be as good as the first, but this is, it's good. It's fresh. It's different. I completely agree with you. It doesn't feel entirely Filoni. I like it. I generally
You know, I think maybe I sounded a little down on it. I'm waiting. I think, you know, whenever you have anything that has some kind of mystery element to it, it's probably important to wait and see, like, does stuff that is confusing or feels weird now actually fit together, or will it not?
Yeah, time has shown that in fact it will not, but I'm hope springs eternal.
I think we're so hopeful here.
I know.
One of my concerns with this show, and I'm kind of curious to see how the show bears it out, is part of me feels like there's too many characters. Like,
there's a lot.
And I don't know yet. I don't have a clear enough vision yet of how all the different parts that they play.
Well, I feel like that's very Russian Doll. I feel like we have many characters, but I think what is different about this than Ahsoka is in literally 60 minutes, I feel like we have established more and better and deeper backstories and character like profiles for all of them. Like, they all feel more unique and distinguished, and I understand their motivations better than anyone else in Ahsoka in a significantly less amount of time.
They seem to be from very different kind of places. Even all the ones that are Jedi seem to have, like, different ranks and different ways of seeing the world. And
I think what I'm waiting to see is how do all their interpersonal relationships and conflicts, minor or major, play into the whole series, right? Because it kind of feels like if this was really just a story about May, Osha, and Saul, like, you know, it feels like that's the nub of it right now. But we bring in Yord and Jeki and Vernestra.
Well, I think they're important because, like, they help, like, they're in some ways lighting to help highlight Saul. Because if it was just Saul, May, and Osha, it would be boring. But, like,
I feel like,
again, very argumentative tonight.
I just want to know if those things are important to the overall, like, are the dynamics going to come into play in relevance to how the story plays out? I assume so, again, but I don't know.
I think we
can
see that with, like, Yord and Jeki just, like, deciding between which path do they take.
Yeah,
right?
I don't know. There's just a gut feeling I had when watching it.
Bad feeling about this?
I have a bad feeling about
this. Do you say that to your friends, too? You just have too many friends and, like, you just don't understand their relevance to the overall story to you?
No, I do understand their relevance. Each one of them. Anyway.
Tony's shaking his head at us. I'm excited for the show. I like it. I'm happy to have Star Wars back in my life.
Yeah, I'm glad Star Wars is back. It was a sad time without Star Wars. Thankfully, there was Star Trek, so that got us through the dark times.
I do appreciate. Yeah. Apparently, Leslie Headland just pitched this to Lucasfilm as Frozen meets Kill Bill, which I feel like I kind of understand a little better now.
I guess I haven't seen Frozen, but I'm having a hard time reconciling.
There's two sisters who think
two sisters
who basically are estranged, and one of them you have differing opinions of how things should be handled.
Got it.
So yeah, I kind of see where you're going with that. Before we wrap up here, can we do a little mail?
No, I don't think I think we should skip it this week.
Okay.
Kat, what do you think?
I'm feeling argumentative, so I absolutely think we should do it.
Oh, well, what am I going to do?
Tony. So.
All right.
Take a walk.
Take a long hyperspace jump off a short hyperspace pier?
We now know it's only a 5-minute drive, so you're fine.
All right. This is from Neil. Neil writes, these are emails to acp@theencouple.com. Feel free to shoot us an email. These are sidetrack comments on the Bad Batch finale podcast. Hey, Dan, Kat, and Tony. I know I'm a few weeks behind, but I just wanted to mention that you all missed the most obvious best Star Wars party guest, who would be Leia. Original trilogy era Leia would be the life of the party, but I don't think in a center of attention negative way. Sequel era Leia would be the center of attention, holding court and telling old war stories, but also making sure everyone else got involved. Or maybe I'm just projecting too much Carrie Fisher into this. By the way, I chuckle every time you go off on a moonlighting tangent, so here's my addition. Moonlighting continues.
We didn't do it that this time. We were so
I was
good.
Born in 76, so 9 to 12 years old during the show's run. I remember watching it often at my grandparents' house, but that must have been during summer reruns because there was no way I was sleeping over and staying up for a Tuesday at 10 p.m. show during the school year. Anyway, keep up the great work, and I can't wait to hear what you all have to say about The Acolyte once it drops. May the force be with you, Neil.
May the force be with you too, Neil. I'd agree. Leia would be a great... I think, yeah. Original series Leia would be fantastic. She's invited to.
Okay.
To our backyard barbecue.
Jay writes, I have a bad feeling about this. Hi, and welcome back to Kat, Tony, and Dan. It feels like forever since you were last in our ears. I'm looking forward to hearing what you thought of the first two episodes of The Acolyte. I thoroughly enjoyed it, from the awesome yet tragic opening action sequence scene to the final shot of the back of a Wookiee. So far, for me at least, this show feels like it'll be closer to Andor than Book of Boba Fett, although just between you, me, and all your millions of listeners, there were some bits of Book of Boba Fett I really liked. This feels like something Tony will have already asked during the podcast, but if not, are there any Star Wars shows / movies where someone doesn't say, I have a bad feeling about this? We assumed
there's laws.
We've assumed it was just Solo's catchphrase that the whole universe started quoting, but now we find out it's a galactic meme that's been around for at least 100 years before the scruffy nerf herder made it famous. Anyway, looking forward to following along with you guys as we watch the show each week. I'm off to rewatch the first two episodes again to see if I can spot any moonlighting references, force, etc., etc. Jay.
I will say on the Wookiee bit, I was delighted by the Wookiee Jedi just because I feel like... And even seeing him, the whole like inner peace and no attachments and like calmness with a Wookiee was fun.
Yeah, they don't even have pants. Makes sense. So,
and we should I should note that is, I'm not going to be able to pronounce his name, Jonas Suatomo, who is the same actor who played Chewbacca, took up the Chewbacca mantle after Peter Mayhew died.
Yep.
So.
Oh, I was going to, I had something we could potentially argue about. Can I insert this in the middle of listener mail?
Sure.
Yeah.
Bring it. So OSHA has a little buddy.
Pip.
Is Pip a droid?
She describes Pip as a droid.
Oh, is he?
Okay. Because he's not,
he's an iPod.
I was reminded.
Well, he's a tripod.
Yeah,
he's a tricorder.
Yeah,
tricorder. He's like a little Game Boy tricorder with moving parts.
And but personality.
He's not ambulatory.
What is your opinion, Tony?
Droid or not?
I just thought this was a new challenging thing of the definition of a droid. And I was slightly reminded, you know, one of the things that I do remember fondly from the Obi-Wan series is that young Leia has
a
little like little droid that's kind of like a
Lola.
Lola, yeah, the little bunny
Lola
there.
That kind of looks like a CD player, kind of looks like a what's the name? Like a beetle.
Beetle, yeah. So. I thought of like a flying
ladybug.
Rabbit.
Ladybug. Ladybug. So,
yeah, I'll take whatever
so
opinion.
Is Pip a droid? I don't know.
Well, I think it's obvious. If you don't know, then it's got to be a chance. I'll take whatever your opposing view is. I don't know what it is, though.
Oh. I'm concerned that Pip might not be a droid because Pip doesn't move. So is Pip just a talking computer? Since... being able to move around the environment seems to be a core droid feature.
I actually agree with you. I think this is it's a really interesting development of like where in that droid world is Pip. It's and now makes me think, should we just start calling all of our computers droids?
They're not ambulatory unless we've opened the definition of them. So anyway, back to listener mail.
We also have a couple posts on Mastodon where you can find us at acp@zeppelin.flights. I can't remember if I read all these things last again. It's been a long time since we've been on. I don't think we read Lyle's last comment where he said, have a great break. Love all the tailspin and adventures of the gummy bear stuff. Cat can actually sing.
That is decidedly not true, but thank you very much. Do, 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 DuckTales.
I did not think that was DuckTales.
I wasn't certain until the very end either.
No, it's Tailspin, right? Life is like a hurricane.
That's DuckTales.
That's DuckTales. I was trying to troll you.
I don't know what's happening. Trevor is back, and Trevor says, hey, all. Saw the first two episodes of The Acolyte. The most confusing thing to me was how clean the costumes were. The sets looked beautiful, dirty, worn, and lived in. While the costumes looked amazing, they looked like they were freshly cleaned. Maybe it's just me? Also, sorry about the length of my last email. I'll keep my messages short for Acolyte. Thank you for your journey through the stars. Well, as we've seen, Yord steams all his uniforms. Close.
Yeah, steam clean.
I want to say another thing I did appreciate is there are actually a couple different versions of the robe. Like, Saul wears different robes.
I will legitimately want a breakdown. I'm sure someone has. If you know where it is online, please send it to us or I'll Google it. Of like a breakdown of the different costumes by time to understand. Like, clearly there were decisions made by the costume designers, and I want to know what they're thinking.
One of the things I thought was interesting is if you look when they're on the planet, I forgot which planet it is, wherever Torben is.
Karlak? No. Orniga?
Or Liga? Or Tega? Or, no.
Nice the ship.
Yeah. Both Yord and Saul are wearing things that look almost a little more like armor. They have like almost gauntlets on, and they're both wearing gloves.
I did notice the gloves. The gloves were interesting.
So it was almost a little bit more like either like a travel thing or like almost like a slightly more combat related.
I wonder if there's something too there about a bunch of thoughts. One of like, if there's something somewhere of like the touch of a Jedi and like their, because of the role they play. Because I think one thing we also have talked previously about is how some of our more skilled Jedi have specializations. And it seems like Saul definitely has the ability to do some mind reading and understanding things that have happened. So he walks into the prison cell of the guy who escaped by himself after tearing off like the parasite, and Saul's basically able to just get him to stop and just say what happened and put him to a trance.
It's almost a mind trick thing, but
it seems like only he can do it. Like, so again, it seems like a specialization.
Everybody else was like, dude, we promised we wouldn't do that anymore. Like,
yeah.
I liked Keimer's bit where he's like, don't wipe my memory or whatever. Like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know. I mean, again, it feels to my mind there's a little bit more of sort of a casual uniform versus like fatigues kind of dynamic happening, where it's like what you wear into combat is not the same as what you wear around the office. And like when he's in the temple on Coruscant, he's wearing his
field robes.
Yeah,
field
exactly.
Robes versus his teaching robes.
Yeah. Right, you don't need as many places to hang lightsabers and gear and stuff on your teaching robes, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't know.
At the end of the day, they all wear robes, though, so, like, it's a little bit of...
But then you have the thing, like, in the Clone Wars, where they all get the, like, they get, basically, clone trooper armor for their sleeves, right?
Yes.
Remember that.
In Clone Wars, they have armor on their
gauntlets.
Obi-Wan
have armored, basically, like... From the elbow down, mainly. I forget if they're wearing anything on their legs.
Yeah, they're wearing greaves, essentially.
I think. Maybe they have something under them. It just is like, you're going to protect your wrists. You know? It's like, you know, you have like a lot of organs in the middle part.
But who really cares about those? I'm seeing if I can find a good example. Yeah, because they wear like it's almost like half plate kind of thing, too,
where the
shoulder like thing is almost. Because both Obi-Wan and he have that, which makes sense. I mean, I guess you bring...
I mean, there you're actually protecting... So working as a picture
of... Yeah, but it only goes down to about here. Your gut is still pretty vulnerable.
He definitely has a triangle literally over his most critical organs. I, again, have questions about decisions made.
Their knowledge of biology at that time
is true again.
Yeah.
No real doctors.
Very limited. I will say, this is not in the episode, but the Wikipedia page for the Acolyte... establish that which character is it, one of the Padawans, I should have looked this up before I interrupted. One of the Padawans is half human, half something else.
Jackie.
I was like, Jackie, yes. And I was like, has that ever come up? That's not a thing that Star Wars spends a lot of time on, is creatures being more than one species.
I don't think we have.
Also, can we talk a little bit about the Padawan who sees like fire burning and Saul's like, and class is over now. Balance, yes. Ocean, yes. Fire, no. Class dismissed.
Is there going to be a scene later where that kid doesn't get to show up in class? And that's the through line is you say one spooky thing as a child and we...
Interesting foreshadowing actually now for the fire.
And I was convinced that scene appears in one of the trailers.
It does,
and I was convinced that it was a flashback and that was May. Or Osha, I guess, as a Padawan, and they were being like, because what we're told is like she has some turmoil with her attachment, and there's some of her lingering grief over her sister.
Anger.
Isn't there a line that basically says, like, you know, you were basically borderline not qualified to be
well, she's old, right? They say you were eight.
Your profile. Well, and that she's an orphan, and therefore it's like, because we didn't come and steal you from your family early enough.
Yeah.
Like, you're not material.
You're not supposed to have any attachments, but if you literally have no attachments, that's too few attachments.
She literally has no attachments. And it's like, no. It's one thing if we steal you from your family. It's another thing if they die of natural causes.
Or in a fire.
I think that may be the issue, is more like your parents were murdered.
I think so. Literally said she's grieving. But I think, Tony, bring up a great point of being stolen from your parents to never see them again is also a form of grieving.
But most of the time they steal them when they're babies and they're too young to know their parents.
I would kill someone if that happened. Anyways.
Oh, you're anti-child theft, Kat? You're going to come out?
Yes. I think I've established this before that like I would personally march the Star Wars Lucasfilm side if they did not return those children to
their parents. I'm also going
to
come out as anti-child theft, and so by a 2/3 majority, this podcast is anti-child theft. So,
true.
You know?
It's true.
FYI, late breaking news. This is mentioned in the Wikipedia article and cited elsewhere. Yord is a temple guardian.
Okay.
Oh.
Which, you know, he seems to spend a lot of time traveling for a temple guard. Also, that's a Jedi job that is no good. Like, Who are you guarding it from?
There's no war at this point.
My entire point of view is rocked by this, and I'm just annoyed that this is being announced via... No. So, Temple Guard was meant to be, like, something you get to maybe after Jedi Knight for people who go a different path than the Jedi Master, and, like, you can't just be a Temple Guard 2 years out of being a Jedi Knight.
You need to do postgraduate work, is what you're saying?
That's absurd.
You need a master's degree in
Jedi master degree, yes.
I can imagine, like, he is a Boy Scout who is specializing towards being a Temple Guard, but he's too young to be a Temple Guard. He has no
Just to be clear, there is currently no system where the Boy Scouts get to transfer into the Jedi Academy. So, you know.
We do have one last message.
Where is that being quoted from? Wikipedia? That's not real.
But it cites a thing where I think is essentially a story online that I believe is using stuff provided backgrounds for all the characters provided by Lucasfilm. Essentially, there's like one line descriptions of these characters and who they are.
If you're doing trading cards from like cereal boxes, like I was last time, this is dubitable. That's not the word.
Dubitable.
Dubious. Thank you.
Yeah. So for example, it describes Chimer as, quote, a former smuggler who now makes his living as a trader, procuring unusual things and enjoying a life of leisure.
He's a former smuggler who's now just a trader? Like, the difference between being a smuggler and a trader is like, like, he's reclassified, like, for business purposes. I don't move goods anymore. I have enough of them, and now I just sell them. The goods are never in transit, therefore it's not smuggling.
I think he's
because I already smuggled them.
Isn't he called a fence at one point in this? Or did I make that up?
I don't think so.
No.
All right. Last message.
Can you please pull up the background they gave on Yord?
I just told you.
That was the smuggler.
Oh, yeah.
I want the actual line.
The whole line for Yord?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I've always thought to go to the
Jedi primary. Knight and guardian from the Jedi Temple. As an overachiever and a rule follower, his need to be a by-the-book Jedi can cloud his mind.
I don't like it. Anyways, next.
Next it is.
I just feel like it, again, undermines the structure that I envision.
You should write them a letter.
Yeah.
Speaking of letters, final letter comes from, I'm sorry, I opened it up, our friend Food Science. I apologize. I don't remember what your name is, but you send this every time. Just watch The Acolyte. Congratulations. Looks like you have more support for your theories about lousy galactic medical technology and remarkable ship crash survival.
It's true.
How do people survive being cut in half or stabbed in the chest by lightsabers, but a single throwing dagger takes out Carrie Ann Moss?
So yeah. I was actually thinking about the evolution of Bacta and the availability of Bacta during this scene and thinking, like, I'm guessing Bacta
it's
not as widely available.
I assume the dagger has poison in it.
Potentially also. That was sort of the special one that she drops from her forearm, so it's definitely the one she was then trying to kill Saul with later.
Yeah.
No.
I assume that you get stabbed in the heart and, like, you're limited. Your time for being healed is limited, basically.
Yeah. The location, but I agree also. I think there's something about the fact that the lightsaber cauterizes you as you get cut that actually might allow you to live longer. But I agree fundamentally.
If they stab you through the heart with a lightsaber, yeah, even if it cauterizes, no, you're still dead.
I totally agree with that. Fundamentally, I agree with you. But I do think there's absolutely something where I believe that, like, yeah, maybe Bacta isn't widely available, or she's on a planet where there isn't a lot of Bacta because she's at a rim. So I can reckon my mind a reason for this.
Or just
this.
There's no one there because everyone has run away from the bar.
Yeah. It's true.
Yeah. Yeah, we should. I guess we didn't point out that bit where, like, she goes to kill the bartender, and then the bartender has his kid there, May, and then she decides not to kill him.
So she's just like compassion.
Exactly. Yeah. It's part of the we're intended to empathize a little bit with her.
I would also like to talk about the crash system. So the seatbelt is two cross straps, but it doesn't, like, there's a lap strap. Which, like, I don't think that actually works.
Also, it's backwards. Is that help or
I didn't understand that. Was that like a jump seat or was that actually like supposed to be for cargo? Or there was cargo in it. I'm just going to say that prison ship was not great.
Yeah.
So
do you feel weird about sitting on a droid? Like, are you flying? I have so many questions. Were there people flying those ships? And then they're like, what if we took their seats and turned them into droids? Or they're like, well, sometimes you still need a person.
Is the whole ship a droid?
They turned them off, though, and the ship kept going.
Yeah.
So I like to envision that essentially originally what happened is you had your pilot seats and they kept adding things to them the same way they keep adding like screens to your EVs until at one point they're like, oh, and then like it just was a natural progression of just over designing the robotics inside the pilot's chairs until it just became natural. So I was like, well, just have it become, we're also going to make it a cute robot, right? It's a marketing gimmick.
And then your car drives away and you're like, but I need to go somewhere. Too bad. Are you in prison? No, you can't go anywhere.
Probably someone in the writer room is like, guys, I got a great idea.
It looks cool. Yeah. The more you think about it, the less sense it makes.
That was not a good prison break either, because it's like, yeah, we'll drop out of hyperspace in a random place where there's an asteroid field. And amazingly, those guys all lived.
Who puts the cyborg, like, who clearly, like, was that not in his dossier?
Yeah, he's like, there's a Bluetooth vulnerability on these droids. Let me totally hack that.
Yeah, Lobot's evil grandfather.
Who was a part pig? I don't know. Ugnaught? Yeah. I don't know. It's unclear. Anyway, all right, down two episodes of The Acolyte. We've got six left to go, which means we're going to be back next week to talk about episode 3. I don't think we know anything about episode 3 other than there's a Wookiee in it, probably.
Yeah.
Probably. But I guess we should bid adieu for the moment. So as a reminder, if you'd like to send us a letter, acp@theacompl.com. or acp@zeppelin.flights on Mastodon. Please, we enjoy getting some mail. We enjoy hearing your theories about what might be going on with this show and what you like and maybe find wanting about it. So write in. Also, as a reminder, if you'd like to support us, you can do that by becoming a member of The Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. Sign up for your membership plan, and then you can choose which shows on the network you'd like to send your contribution to, including us. Because
us?
We appreciate
really?
It. I feel like it. You don't have to.
Like a little bit.
And finally, we also have a shirt available at HelloNerds.shop, which you can check out. Maybe we'll make more. I don't know. We haven't figured out what our Acolyte shirt is yet.
We still have to go back to Jester Blue later.
I know. Well, we failed to give Tony feedback on that, so we're in trouble.
I know.
It's not like that was months ago.
I think it might have been.
Oh, well, then you're bad.
It's been such a few months.
Inside you, there are two people. One person who gives me a feedback on shirt ideas, and the other person who's an assassin.
Murders so, Jedi.
Yeah. Yep. Friends with both.
All that remains for me to thank my co-hosts. Kat Benish, thanks for being here.
Thank you, guys. This is always a fun. Thank you all for listening and writing in.
Tony Sindelar, always a pleasure.
Yeah, I guess so.
Strong Hi. Support.
Tony loves being here every week. Don't let him convince you different.
Tony did 2 hours of D&D before this, so he says.
We're blaming that, not just us.
not just my general surliness.
Well, we don't know if he actually played D&D, like purportedly played D&D.
It is recorded and streamed on the internet, so there's actually
so
a pretty good
you
paper trail.
Say
so I do say
so you're saying it was your twin who just anyway thank you everybody out there for listening. We will see you next week, but until then,
goodbye.
And may the force be with you.
The Incomparable Podcast Network. Become a member and support this show today. TheIncomparable.com/members